The longest field goal ever attempted is 76 yards. The longest field goal ever missed? Also 76 yards. Why bring this up? Because knowing your limits matters, both when you're kicking a field goal and when you gamble. Betting more than you're comfortable with is like trying a 70-yard field goal. It probably won't go well. So set a limit when you gamble and stick to it. Want more helpful tips like this? Go to KeepItFunOhio.com for games, quizzes, and lots of ways to keep your gambling from getting out of hand.
Do you want a beautiful lawn? Enter True Green, the easiest way to get a great lawn. Just water and mow, and they'll do the rest. Weed control, fertilization, aeration, and more. True Green is the official lawn care treatment provider of the PGA Tour, and they have a verified best price, which guarantees you the lowest price with no compromise on quality. You do you. Let True Green do your lawn care. Visit truegreen.com, TrueGreen.com, to get the best lawn at the best price with the best people. Guaranteed.
Hello, everybody. Welcome to the Roto-World Football Show. I am Patrick Daugherty, joined by Pat Corain, Kyle Dvorak, Danny Carter, as we get ready to preview the entire week four. It's week four, everybody.
Yes.
Week four slate. We're going to go in depth on some of the week's biggest games, including the Bills at the Ravens and the Bucks hosting the Chiefs for Sunday Night Football. We're going to touch on all this week's hot button fantasy players. But first, I don't have a riffing topic. So I just wrote literally "but first."
You want to tell us where you are right now? Pat?
I'm in a, as you can see, I'm in a children's hotel. There are two twin beds behind me because, my internet is still out at my house, and I'm podcasting from my parents-in-law, and I'm not the Joker at all.
No, you're definitely not unhinged. No one's calling you unhinged.
I was not totally unhinged for several minutes before we began the podcast.
None of us are fearful for you personally.
I'm just glad you haven't cursed me out today.
Yeah, I know. I am famous for just reaming you guys behind that. Shut up! I want to do the show the way I want to do the show.
Well, you send us an email every Thursday saying control F ourselves.
You know. Yeah, search your name. Search Denny. Search Corain. I think you guys do it.
We do pretty well.
I think the bigger sign that might be coming unhinged is the only thing I wanted to talk about all week is Mac Hollins. Can we talk about how funny this Mac Hollins thing is, right? It's a joke, right? It's a bit, right? Like I'm not actually infatuated with Mac Hollins, right?
It's a bit that's losing me money right now.
I know. Denny and I talked about this on Galaxy Brains. Check it out on the NFL and NBC YouTube page, where I speculated this could be costing Mark Davis his second home. Because by NFL owner standards, he's not that rich. And he didn't mortgage that home to acquire Davante Adams than to see Mac Hollins have 172 yards every week.
Right. Why sign Adams if you could have just signed Mac Hollins?
The worst part is it's working. It worked last week. No. I'd feel much better if this whole thing was like Mac Hollins went 4 for 10.
Yeah.
You know, 4 catches for 29 yards. But, seeing him get up to like 20% owned in high stakes and burying me in the face didn't feel great.
Right in the face.
Right in the face. Oh, my gosh, Mac Hollins. He needs to cool down, settle down just a little bit, Mac Hollins, is all we ask. Or if you're going to do this, maybe you could have done it five or six of the years I had you in my dynasty. That would have been nice. I finally admitted you were a sunk cost when you were ready to lead the NFL in receiving. And I'm finally admitting that it's time to start this podcast. Coming off two of week three's crazier contests, the Bills and Ravens square off in Baltimore with Buffalo operating as 3-point road favorites. Denny, we know these are two of the most explosive offenses in the NFL, but questions still abound for Baltimore, mostly in the backfield. J.K. Dobbins flopped in his week three debut, and now Coach John Harbaugh is talking up Justice Hill as, quote, a star. Seems problematic. What should fantasy managers be thinking here?
Yeah, well, for those who didn't pay much attention to the Baltimore backfield, first of all, congratulations in week three. But Kenyon Drake was a healthy scratch last week against New England, Justice Hill had 6 carries for 60 yards. Dobbins had 7 carries for 23 yards. Not fantastic. Dobbins did see all 3 high-value touches out of the backfield. He ran 13 routes to 10 routes for Justice Hill. Hill, as you might know from his 6 for 60 line, Hill had a way higher yards before contact and evasion rate. I believe he appears to be the best running back option the Ravens have. That doesn't mean he's fantastic, and it doesn't mean that he's going to start dominating backfield touches. But I think John Harbaugh's quote should be taken somewhat seriously. I've rostered Justice Hill in a few leagues this week, just in case things start trending in his direction. And the week 3 usage wasn't hateful, I don't think.
Sometimes, podcasts, especially when you have 4 people, you kind of zone out a little bit. And I zoned out just a little bit when Denny was talking, and I heard you mention Hill have the best game. And not kidding, I was like, who is Hill on the Ravens? I'm like, what?
And, it sounds like you zoned out more than a little bit.
And that was the guy I just mentioned that is apparently maybe their best running back right now. I mean, Crane, is there any data to save J.K. Dobbins? Or is this just kind of a situation where we have to like believe our eyes, and clearly the team does not think J.K. Dobbins is like healthy enough to play his normal role. And is there any counter to what Denny just said, or is this just kind of how it is right now in the Ravens backfield?
Yeah. I mean, he had 44% snap share last week. Hill was at 47%. But Hill had the more touches, led the backfield 27% share of team attempts. So, I mean, but this, to me, this is sort of to be expected. Like Dobbins, didn't start.
Is it really to be expected? I mean,
Dobbins' knee is spaghetti, man. Like, he had so many injuries that he was dealing with. It wasn't just a torn ACL. Apparently, he damaged his meniscus. I think it was, like, his MCL as well. So, like, I think even when he's active, he deserves a chance to really get, like, worked up to speed. Like, he destroyed his knee. So even his first game back, even if they're saying he is 100% back to like physical health, like this could even just be like a mental health thing that you don't want to give a dude who's coming off like a very bad injury 20 carries or 10 in his first game back. So I don't know. I think there's like a lot of like non-spreadsheet factors that we have to think about.
Well, he didn't play from a knee injury he suffered last summer until week 3 of this season. I think it is to be expected that he would be in a part-time role to start.
Yeah, that's a real shame. But yeah, we can't say they didn't warn us.
I think he'll get to a better role at some point, though. I mean, like, just when you think about, like, if he is – maybe he's never the same type of running back, but if he is, like, the talent discrepancy and, like, the draft capital discrepancy between him and Justice Hill, I think is important. And what we saw from J.K. Dobbins, it was 2 years ago now, but what we saw from him in his debut was really promising. So, I don't know. I think eventually there's still room for his talent to just create a role that we didn't see in his debut.
To 51 total, are any of you willing to flex J.K. Dobbins this week? Denny, would you be willing to flex J.K. Dobbins?
No way.
Crane saying no way. Kyle, any chance you're flexing J.K. Dobbins?
I mean, like, if you didn't win the Khalil Herbert bid off, the Jamal Williams bid off in your fab leagues, and you've been sitting on J.K. Dobbins, like, it's a sweat. You're just hoping he gets, like, 10 for 60 and a touchdown catches 2 passes. But, like, we got a lot of injuries coming down the pipe. I think I'm only going to rank him as, like, maybe I think maybe I can squeeze him into like RB36, RB, inside the top 40. That's not
right,
promising. Yeah. That's not great.
Yeah. Don't put him in your flex, but I'll probably put him in my RB2, which is a weaker spot for me.
Oh, man. Come on, man. That was like the most subtle shot ever at the running back position.
don't put a running back in the flex. What are you
doing? Oh my gosh. Yeah. I have him just inside the top 40. So outside the flex ranks. Crane, sticking with you, is there a Rashad Bateman spiked week incoming? He has 226 yards on 8 catches. like this is like ridiculous, like per catch production, but he has only 8 catches. So it hasn't really been getting home in fantasy. And this really high total game, the Bills are kind of getting caught up in shootouts. Is there any spiked week hope for Rashad Bateman this week?
I actually do think there is, and I benched Bateman in a couple of leagues last week because I was worried about how much he was out there. Because it's not just the per target and per catch production, it's per route. I mean, he has been super efficient on his routes among players with 70%+ route participation. He has 3.05 yards per route run. That trails only Jalen Waddle, Tyreek Hill, and Julio Jones this season. So he's been hyper efficient, but we know we can't count on really any player to just crush on limited routes. And that's why I think it was so important to see last week him get up to a 79% route rate. That's a rate we can do something with. And hopefully maybe even moves up a little bit from there. He's been so good. Kind of just makes so much intuitive sense for him to do that. He is going to be boom bust. His profile is definitely very boom bust, even if he's out there a lot, because he has a 17.6 ADOT. He's kind of filled in for the Marquise Brown deep threat role, which makes a lot of sense in terms of what this offense needs. He's been awesome in that role, so I don't really see that changing. So I think we will get some more spike weeks, but you know, you're also going to have some disappointing weeks with that kind of deep downfield usage being inconsistent.
Kyle, on the other side of the ball, speaking of inconsistent, Gabe Davis through the first three games, partly because he missed the game, then maybe he's not 100% healthy. He missed practice on Thursday. He was downgraded. I don't know if we've really seen concern that he might miss this game, but this is assume Gabe Davis is going to play. And just talk about the situation like writ large. Is there any concern for Gabe Davis that, you know, as he's kind of getting off to this false start, that Stephon Diggs might just be too good this year for Gabe to really get in the top 24? Or do we just need to keep the faith in this elite offense?
I think to me, the concern wouldn't be that Stephon Diggs is too good. I mean, this is right now, I believe you're number one team in pass rate over expected, number one team in overall passing yards. They're lighting teams up. We shouldn't be concerned that there's only room for one option this offense. I think we have to be concerned that Gabe Davis just isn't that good. Right now, he ranks 104th out of 113 eligible receivers on at least 30 routes in targets per route run. He's just going out there and not earning looks when he's just running these sort of deep wind sprinty type of stuff.
We're all nodding at you.
I'm not selling out yet. I think he's like a sneaky DFS play after he got a little bit of steam and busting last week. He ran 96% routes last week and 100 in week one. So I'm not concerned too much about the health. I'm not concerned about his role as far as getting on the field. But when he's not earning targets and his competition outside of Diggs is McKenzie and Jameson Crowder.
He's been hurt.
Maybe. I mean, I'm still sort of optimistic.
What are you suggesting?
It's a bit of a false flag operation to excuse the poor production. Now, I don't know. Maybe the hurtness is why he's not doing a lot, but like, he's been bad so far. He's just been out there running a lot of wind sprints. Does that mean, like, we have a two-game sample on him, and he's playing nearly every snap on the best offense in the NFL. So that's why I'm holding the faith, right? Because guys who play a ton of snaps alongside Josh Allen are guys I want to consistently be betting on. And he leads the team in average depth of target, so he's going to be among the crew, probably the volatile one, the one who goes out, doesn't get home on two or three of his deep shots, and that's kind of the day ruined for him. And then I'll have days where he goes out and he connects on both of them and goes 150 and two touchdowns or something. So I want to keep betting on him, but I do think kind of we oversold the ability of him to sort of be a 1B in this offense based on our two-game sample.
I don't think so. I mean, he was nursing an ankle injury last week, and the ADOT point is the key point. He had a 16.4 ADOT week one. So, yeah, his target per route run, 13% in that game, wasn't great, wasn't good even. But he still had 36% of the air yards, which is very good because he gets targeted downfield. Players who get targeted downfield consistently generally earn less, like, targets less frequently, right? It's harder to earn a target 16 yards downfield than it is to earn one if you're Isaiah McKenzie at, like, 7 yards downfield. So, I don't know. We've got that game. Then we've got this game where he was – like completely invisible as he comes back from the ankle injury. To me, I don't think that tells us a whole lot. And the fact that he was out there for 96% route participation in his first game back from an ankle injury also to me shows me that they do want Gabriel Davis playing a like true full-time role in this offense. So to me, I'm like, I think it's like mildly bullish that he came back to that level of snaps and routes. And I'm just not even really considering last week in terms of the talent evaluation. The guy, you know, coming back from an ankle injury, deep threat with a bum ankle, probably not going to draw that many targets.
Struggling since opening week wins, the Saints and Vikings, Denny, are headed to London Town in search of inspiration, trying to find themselves across the pond. Yeah. What do fantasy managers need to know about our latest excursion to the superpower that we vanquished?
Well, they need to know that the pound is way down.
Boy, is it ever. Does anyone know anything about this, by the way? Like, why all of a sudden, like, England's like on the brink of financial collapse?
It seems to have something to do with a economic plan that was introduced that did not go over well with the people who have all the money. Anyway, getting back to football, you have Michael Thomas and Jameis Winston did not practice Thursday. You know, it's not looking great for their availability. I would say that even a limited practice on Friday, I think that you can pencil them in to your lineups. Remember to set your lineups early because the English are on a different time zone than us, it turns out.
Yeah. We will not bow to our whims there.
But. I think. And I think missing Jameis would, and Andy Dalton would apparently start for the Saints if, and he has taken first team snaps through the first 2 days of practice. Missing Jameis would take away a lot of fantasy appeal from this game. Okay. I think that the prospect of these teams pushing each other would fade, to be generous, maybe completely vanish. And it would be bad for everybody's fantasy prospects in this matchup. Hopefully Jameis plays, but you really will have to downgrade a lot of players if Andy Dalton is in there, including Chris Olave, who is, you know, earning a million air yards a game and appears to be the most, you know, had the most fantasy upside of anybody in the Saints receiver room. This could, I want to mention Alvin Kamara here, and I know he's one of the more frustrating players in fantasy right now, but this could theoretically be a good matchup for Kamara against a Vikings defense allowing the ninth highest EPA against the run. And as on the Vikings side now, Kevin O'Connell, the coach of the Vikings, said, "Hey, they're double teaming Justin Jefferson. We didn't see it coming. not sure how you don't know that's going to happen, but maybe they will prepare." I think that Adam Thielen and KJ Osborne stepping up last week, they combined for a 48% target share. They had 11 combined catches, 2 combined touchdowns. I think that that actually could be good for Justin Jefferson over the long run, maybe even the short term, showing teams, hey, you know, like we don't have to just jam a million targets to Jefferson to win. Like we can do it other ways. Hopefully that leads to fewer double teams because apparently the Vikings don't know what to do with that.
It's like cover 2 is catching everyone by surprise. I guess heard about this trend or like some defenses like
2 guys on 2 one
defenders on a receiver. I've never heard of such a thing in all my life. Yeah, not a great sign. Danny, I wanted to say you were being too pessimistic about Jameis, but you really weren't. Like no. They asked offensive coordinator Pete Carmichael like if he was going to play, and he was basically like, "I just work here." Asked Dennis Allen, I'm like, "Oh, that's not a great sign," especially after he was expected to practice Thursday. So I do think they wouldn't have flown him across the Atlantic Ocean with a broken back if they didn't think he was going to start. But clearly something is not responding
right
the way they expected. So anybody have any quick thoughts they have to get out on this game?
Well, this Dalvin Cook shoulder thing, I mean, he was a full participant today in practice. So I guess it's like nothing, but it knocked him out of the game and he has a history of shoulder injuries. So it seems like somewhat concerning.
I think what happened there, Crane, is he's had this injury so many times, they finally got it down to a science because – I think we talked about this with Denny. He had a 205-yard game against the Steelers playing through his exact injury last year with a harness, but it was after he missed a game. Maybe now they're just confident after that experience last year that he can't make it worse and that they're comfortable throwing him out there. He's another guy where I don't think they'd be flying him to Londinium, look it up, if they were expecting him not to play. So I think he will play, but I agree. It's kind of weird. He just like separated his shoulder and he's going to play a football game 7 days later. But so it goes. And so it goes that Las Vegas wanted to believe in Browns Falcons, Kyle, but the total has come down from 49.5 right now to 47.5. Is this game trending in the wrong direction? And what do the folks need to know?
I mean, down from 49.5 is technically the wrong direction, but I mean, even 47.5 feels like an achievement for the matchup of Jacoby Brissett versus Marcus Mariota. 47.5 in a year where offense has been down is a very respectable total. I think it's top 5 on the Sunday main slate for DFS. This game, though, I will admit, does kind of look like, especially from the Browns' perspective, a super runoff. You know, Nick Chubb leads the NFL in carries, leads the NFL in rushing yards, and he faces a defense ranked dead last in EPA per play against run plays. So Nick Chubb's just absolutely run wild against the Falcons. We'll say Amari Cooper, this blows my mind. Amari Cooper has over a 50% share of this team's air yards. I think that kind of comes down to the fact that they don't have a lot of other options. And when they are throwing to them, it's been someone like Kareem Hunt, where they've been using, you know, David Njoku and Harrison Bryant on short stuff. So to me, that is more a product of, you know, it's a symptom of the offense only moving the sticks with Amari Cooper. Nonetheless, though, in a game where they're projected to put up points, Amari Cooper getting over half the team's air yards, very impressive. Like, that is wide receiver 2 worthy without a doubt, given that Vegas is willing to back Cleveland putting up points. On the other side, Kyle Pitts, finally, best game of the year. He got over 20 yards, which is such a low mark for the first time, but I think he cleared it to the tune of 87 yards, so he blew it away. Led the team in targets for the first time this year. The only concern is that he ran a route on just 68% of the Mariota dropbacks. That number was a season low for him, despite the actual production being a season high. But overall, I think the game gives us confidence that Kyle Pitts is roughly who we thought he was. He is still clearly one of the like wide receiver one type of tight ends. It's just the Falcons rank 31st in pass attempts per game, and he does have at least now one strong competitor for targets in Drake London. So Pitts definitely still, like, I think the bottom has fallen out, right? We've reached that point where we hit the bottom and we're on our way back up. But maybe we were still a little bit bullish just overall, either on the offense or on his role in draft season. But I'm still comfortable ranking him as a top five tight end without any hesitation.
I think I may be a little bit more nervous about the route participation, where it's like that just shouldn't be in his range of outcomes.
Yeah, I really don't know what to make of that to get to, like, I mean, like, he's basically in the year, he's almost exactly, I thought this was convenient, he's almost exactly on par with David Njoku as far as route participation goes, which, like, I don't want the David Njoku role for this third round.
Not what we signed up for.
Yeah, not what I signed up for.
I'm starting to think what it means is that Drake London is the guy in this offense. He's a 32% target share.
Well, 35%. I was laughed out of the room for saying that last week.
Were
well,
you?
You were right.
Rain laughed me out of the room.
You were right, and now you've come off it, and now I'm stealing your
time. I know.
Wow. That's hard, tough, rough and tumble world out there. So he's the guy, huh? That's
I think Drake London's the guy. I mean, I feel like the production from Pitts is what we wanted to see, but I feel like we have no shot of giving the Kelce, Mark Andrews type of stuff that I really felt was in the range as of, you know, 4 weeks ago, right? 4 weeks ago today, I would have been like, yeah, he can be tight end one overall. We have no chance of getting that, it feels like.
We got
2.74 yards per route run from Drake London, which is off the charts good, and it's sustained by volume. He's not running hot in yards per target. He's getting enough volume to where that's actually sustainable if he keeps getting it.
We got a little shocked Thursday afternoon when David Njoku missed practice, but it appears it was just a rest day. So
good.
Did anybody? What's the real Njoku? Just real quick. I mean, is he going to actually be a tight end one? That doesn't take a lot to be a tight end one this year.
Yeah.
Is he going to look more, Danny, is he going to look more like weeks one and two in Njoku or week three in Njoku?
Well, Kevin Stefanski said after that big game against the Steelers, he said, look, coverage scheme is going to dictate how we use Njoku. And he said, you know, we love him as a blocker. You know, primarily we love his block. No. So, David, if you're listening, please stop being a good teammate and a good blocker. It's really hurting us. So I actually don't think that you can bank on anything close to that sort of usage from a week-to-week basis. I do think that he can be a tight end one, but that's really not saying much, right?
No,
I
mean, that's it's like, not this year. It's just crazy.
It's like literally anyone out there running routes can be a tight end one. So I think you should start him. I have him in a couple leagues, and I know it was rough in the early going. Last week was fun. I'm not expecting next week pretty much at all going forward. Like, I think that was an aberration, but I do think that he should give you some sort of floor as the number two option in that passing offense.
I think it points to a ceiling when Watson gets back. So
yeah, that's
you
true.
Have to, that's he true. Hit waivers in a league. And we bid like 25%+ of our budget to try and get him and didn't win. So, you know, obviously the hype is now on Njoku, but just a reminder that, you know, in high stakes leagues, people in tight end premium high stakes leagues, he was dropped. So
just wait till he's cut again in 4 weeks.
Yeah, yeah, exactly. But don't do that. Don't do that. Because I think he has a big ceiling at the end of the season in the fantasy playoffs.
And I think he's a tight end one because I think you should still take your chances with David Njoku over your chances with Gerald Everett or like Tyler Higbee. So I think by that definition.
Oh, I don't know over Everett. I don't know.
Yeah,
I don't know over Higbee.
I think you chose two bad examples. I think if you had said
they're bad players, they're bad players.
There's three good tight ends in definitely. The NFL, all right? Yeah, I guess Higby's bad too. But I mean, like, I would take him over like Big Daddy Conklin, right? He's getting a lot of routes and a lot of targets, I have never in my life seen my opponent play Tyler Conklin and thought, oh no, what if he gets 15 points against me? Never happening. I have that fear when they set David Njoku against me.
Listen, Gerald Everett has this going for him. He cannot and will not block, and that's good.
That is good.
Actually, an extremely, extremely good point.
Big Daddy Conklin's blocking all the time.
Yeah, and it's an extremely good time to take a break. We'll be right back after this.
Dive into the start of summer at Whole Foods Market. Check out their summer splash event with sales on fresh organic produce, organic strawberries, and a fan favorite sale on Ben & Jerry's and Talenti. Explore deals on grill-friendly meats like organic air-chilled chicken breast, beef and chicken kebabs, all with no antibiotics ever from our meat department. Plus, grab easy sides from prepared foods and cool off with refreshing drinks. Kick off your summer and shop in-store or online at Whole Foods Market today.
The longest field goal ever attempted is 76 yards. The longest field goal ever missed? Also 76 yards. Why bring this up? Because knowing your limits matters, both when you're kicking a field goal and when you gamble. Betting more than you're comfortable with is like trying a 70-yard field goal. It probably won't go well. So set a limit when you gamble and stick to it. Want more helpful tips like this? Go to KeepItFunOhio.com for games, quizzes, and lots of ways to keep your gambling from getting out of hand.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
Just a reminder, if you don't have the NBC Sports Predictor app, go download it now. The contests are free and easy to play, and you have a shot to win thousands this weekend by predicting what will happen in college football, Major League Baseball, on the NASCAR circuit, and in the Premier League. There's also $100,000 up for grabs by guessing the outcome between the Chiefs and Bucks and our Sunday Night 7 contest. Yeah, you got to move the pot on when everyone starts saying Conk Daddy a bunch. It was a good time for a break.
That's when the promos hit.
That's when the promos hit. And this is when the Chiefs and Bucks hit. They're a pair of wounded superpowers meeting up in Tampa, with the Chiefs arriving in town as narrow one-point favorites. Crane, there's so much to sort through in the Bucks' injury-riddled receiver core, but we'll start in Kansas City. No one is really popping in the conventional box scores yet. Do you see anything in the underlying data that is encouraging on Juju Smith-Schuster, Marquez Valdes-Scantling, maybe even option three? This kind of what is going on in the Chiefs receiver core?
I do think that, you know, when you look at Juju, it's not great, but it's like better than the alternatives. He has a 19% target per route run, which is not good. It's not terrible, though, and is significantly better than Marquez Valdes-Scantling and Mecole Hardman, who are both at 15%. I noted last week that MVS hasn't really seen much in terms of deep targets. Is ADOT still in the season? Much lower than we'd expect at 10.5. Starting to just think maybe he's not clicking with Mahomes, and that's, you know, not going to change.
You say not good.
Yeah. I mean, I do feel like he maybe is not good, but at the same time, he's been actually a decent deep threat for so long that maybe it's a chemistry thing, but
it's funny that we get the MVS is being used all over the field stuff. And then as soon as that happens, like, no, maybe we shouldn't have done that. Undo.
He's one dimensional. Let's do that. Please. Yeah.
But yeah, I mean, he has 1.06 yards per out run. That's really bad. Hardman has 0.93, which is obviously even worse. So, I mean, it's Kelce, man. Like, Kelce, we spent so much time talking last year about how Kelce's ADOT was declining. And to me, that looked like, you know, he turns 33 this October. Like,
ancient.
And last year, it's, you know, we were starting to worry about his age. But currently, he has a 10.3 ADOT, which is a career high. He has 31% of the Chiefs' air yards, which leads the team. So, you know, if you're worried about Kelce being able to win downfield, he still seems to have it. I think everyone else is just kind of secondary at this point.
Damn. Yeah, the Chiefs, kind of some bad vibes there. I mean, Mahomes arguing on the sideline with Eric Bieniemy, just seeming like not knowing how to get all the new parts going. It would have been fine. They could have easily been 3-0 and still like not had their identity figured out. But there's a big difference between being 3-0 and then 2-1 with a loss to Matt Ryan. So Chiefs kind of an interesting spot.
They choked that game away. Like they were so conservative. I don't know what happened to our Chiefs, but that was not them.
Danny, I have a question for you about our Chiefs in a minute. But Kyle, first, let's stick with receiver injury madness. But Mike Evans is coming off suspension. Chris Godwin is practicing, but probably not playing. Rashad Perriman is hurt. I mean, Russell Gage is Russell Gage. I mean, what do we tell people about, like, who's even playing for the Bucs receivers this weekend?
Yeah, I mean, Mike Evans playing. He obviously isn't hurt. It's just a suspension. You know, he fights Lattimore once every year, every other year. It's like a leap year type of deal. Gets kicked out of the league for a week and comes back. It's fine. Russell Gage, Rashad Perriman look like they'll play. Perriman was a DMP to start the week, but he's also old. So you DMP him whenever he's feeling a little rusty. But I think the operative point to me was that Russell Gage couldn't clear like 30 yards through 2 weeks while he had any competition for targets. And then, of course, he goes out without Mike Evans, Godwin, Julio, and gets 13 targets. But that's because he's Russell Gage and he's the option of last resort. With Mike Evans back, I think he gets sent back to the realm of like probably not even flex worthy. Julio Jones could also play this game. And as I think Rain noted, Julio is, I believe, number three in yards per route run. He looked good when they first had him, but then he did the whole game where he looks good and then he can't play anymore. So it'd be an all-time Julio thing for him to come back as like, oh, he was so efficient in week one, play six snaps and then exit. Like, that'd be the GOAT Julio.
That's the thesis of the play.
Oh, man, it scares.
Just want to maximize those six snaps.
Yeah, man.
Just get in the end zone on those six snaps, please.
Please, God. Get 60 yards, you know, twice and then leave the game. So I'd be jamming Mike Evans because I don't think they have really much talent outside of him. And this is assuming Godwin doesn't play. It looked like Godwin was a week out heading into this week, like one more week away. But, you know, the practicing isn't optimistic. As long as he doesn't play, I think it's the Mike Evans or bust show.
That sounds correct to me. And really the only one you want to cast your lot with, you can maybe cast your wide receiver four lot with Russell Gage because
I would.
It was frankly weeks one or two. Like, I think you can expect more production than that. I mean, even
he's Russell Gage.
Yeah, it's true.
I think we could be like maybe 2 weeks away from a Cole Beasley slot takeover in Tampa. I'm just putting it out there.
Wow.
No.
Oh, man.
Listen, Brady said that he feels like he's been playing for 20 years.
That's disgusting. Cole
Beasley. Good God.
He was with the team for 11 minutes and saw
Cole Beasley targets. Looks like he's been playing for 20 years.
Yeah.
So, I'll be very concerned if Brady releases a Cole Beasley NFT soon. And then I might be like, uh-oh. This is for real. Denny, I said
NFT, you shouldn't buy that, but
Denny, the Chiefs CEH, he's like a top five PPR back, but like he doesn't even like get the ball. It seems like touchdown luck. Is should we be bullish, bearish on CEH? I was very bearish on him in my rankings this week. It's like, I don't even know what to think with this guy anymore.
Yeah, I mean, the bottom is going to fall out, maybe this week, maybe next week, but Jerick McKinnon has logged more snaps than CEH through three games. After a hot start, like efficiency-wise, because he ripped off some long runs, had a couple long catches in the first couple weeks. CEH now has a negative rush yards over expected per attempt. McKinnon has...
Rolls right off the tongue.
Yeah, I know. But what can you do? The metrics nerds make this as difficult as possible. McKinnon has run more pass routes against the Colts last week. Both guys saw seven carries. I don't think that this is like trending like hard in McKinnon's direction, but it is a little bit. I think it is just a little bit. And I just don't think Clyde Edwards-Helaire is ever going to be like a reliable, like plug and play high end RB2 or something, because you cannot count on him continuing to score a touchdown like every fourth touch. Okay. He had seven carries for 0 yards last week. So it's just it is bad. I looked it up. It is bad. So I think that you have to be very careful with him. I think if someone in your league is somehow hypnotized by all the touchdowns he scored, then go ahead and trade him now, because I'm telling you, the bottom is going to fall out.
Clyde Edwards-Helaire ranks first in the NFL among running backs in yards per route run. PFF has him graded as their top receiving back. And, you know, this is just Cope. I don't think he's very good.
No, but I was going to note the same thing, that he is... If you go down to five targets, he's third in yards per run, but you know, he's still been very good. But I think he's blocked by Jerick McKinnon. I think CH is basically like a contingent play for the receiving role.
Yeah.
Because he's behind Jerick McKinnon for that role. But he has finally, after 3 years, you know, he came in as supposed to be this receiving back. He's finally flashing something as a receiver. But McKinnon has 43% route participation to CEH's 37%. McKinnon's also logged over twice as many pass blocking snaps.
Yeah.
So it does feel like CEH is a bit blocked. And the only thing he can do well, he ranks even worse than rush yards over expected per attempt. He ranks RB 40 in success rate per NFL Next Gen. So it's like he's not even a consistent rusher in addition to giving you not really any big play upside. So, yeah, I think what should happen here is that someone should take over the early down role from CEH. You guys know who I want that to be. And then, you know, if McKinnon suffers an injury or something, then maybe CEH could actually be a league winner, but through taking over the McKinnon role later.
Yeah, I mean, it's nice to finally see some passing game production in year three, but they've had back-to-back close games, and a season high for carries in a game is 8. Like, that's just not going to get it. You're like J.D. McKissic, basically. Like, he's basically almost being used like J.D. McKissic. Like you said, unlike J.D. McKissic, he's not even the primary passing down back. So this yeah. feels like a house of cards, and don't really feel comfortable calling him an RB2. Crane, the Washington Commanders traded a pair of third-round picks for Carson Wentz, only to find themselves as three-point dogs versus Cooper Rush. What do the folks need to know about Commanders, Cowboys?
Maybe they can trade for Cooper Rush. Maybe that's the next one.
They should look into it.
That's the point.
It's kind of an interesting matchup because the Cowboys look like a bit of a run funnel. But it's not like they're bad against the run. It's that teams don't want to deal with this pass rush. And the Commanders are not a good running team. They've been quite inefficient running the ball. I think maybe there's some hope here for Gibson. He's RB11 in success rate, provides a little bit of optimism. He's RB13 in yards per out run. So, you know, potentially like a last hurrah here for Gibson before Brian Robinson maybe gets back. I think he should be in lineups. Maybe there's a little bit more rushing volume. Maybe he bounces back a little bit here as a rusher. But I also think that there's some real downside for the offense as a whole. You know, we saw last week the offense crater. I think that could happen again. Carson Wentz is 22nd in EPA per play. He's now getting a second graded pass rush.
Is it that high?
Wow. Yeah, exactly. So I think basically all the Commanders look like risky bets in terms of the receivers. Terry McLaurin leads the group with 1.7 yards per route run, but he's been very efficient on a per target basis. All of these guys on a per route basis actually have not seen very good volume. It's all overall offensive passing volume that's driving the production here. So I think everyone on the Commander side is a risky bet. The Commanders, meanwhile, are looking like a pass funnel. I don't think the Cowboys are going to fully embrace this matchup, but we could see some additional volume, kind of like, you know, when the 49ers get a pass funnel, they go to balanced instead of run heavy. So, you know, I think maybe we see like a slightly pass first team here with the Cowboys. I think that sets up CeeDee Lamb really well. He has a 6.0 yards per target. We all saw him drop that. I mean, come on, you got to catch that ball for a touchdown.
Got to catch the cutter.
Yeah.
Friend of the pod, he promised he'll catch it next time.
It's about 3 yards lower than expected based on his ADOT, which is at 10.7. The volume here has been awesome. He's a 33% target share. He's a 42% air yard share. His whopper of 0.8 trails only Mark Andrews, Cooper Kupp, and Amari Cooper. I think he's the most interesting guy on both sides of the ball here, with the Cowboys maybe passing a little bit more. And then, yeah, in the backfield, we know how this is going to go. Tony Pollard, he's 5th in rush yards over expected per attempt. He's 8th in success rate. He's 7th in yards per out run. Ezekiel Elliott ranks 33rd, 19th. He ranks 53rd in yards per out run. He has a negative yards per out run, which I don't think I've ever seen before, of negative 0.09. Doesn't matter. Elliott's going to get more work.
If you're only listening to the pod, which most of you are probably just hearing in audio form, Pat's face almost like leapt off his head.
Right. He was tilting.
He was tilting. And Michael Gallup probably making his debut in this game. Maybe if you're like a wide receiver four desperado, you could justify getting him in there, but probably a wait and see week for Michael Gallup. Real quick, Crane, just in rankings, are you ranking Terry McLaurin or Curtis Samuel as the highest Commanders receiver?
I don't know. If you want to rank Curtis Samuel higher, I wouldn't fault you, because they need to get the ball out quickly. You know, that low ADOT thing could actually – he could rack up some catches. And if I'm betting on the offense to kind of fail, which I think is the way to play it, then, you know, Samuel can probably get there in a failing offense.
I'm betting on it failing so hard that we get 30 pass attempts in the second half, one of which is the classic Trevon Diggs, broken coverage, doesn't know what he's doing. Terry McLaurin streaks by him. Oh, and on boy. The next drive, it's pick six, goes the other way.
That is pretty galaxy brain there.
Yeah, I think this game sets up really poorly for McLaurin, just as far as like Wentz having time in the pocket to let those downfield routes develop.
The Patriots' Brian Hoyer is still in this league awareness campaign. Begins with the Pats arriving in Green Bay. Denny is 9.5-point underdogs. I just made an elaborate joke saying that Brian Hoyer is going to start, but the Patriots are claiming Mac Jones may still start. Denny, you had some thoughts about that in the Galaxy Brains video this week.
Yeah, it's interesting how a guy can be carried off while screaming in agony, and then 1 week later, he might play. You never know.
Yeah, I haven't really seen that before.
I guess the Patriots need the defense to be able to prepare for both quarterbacks, which in this case would be the exact same defensive game plan. I don't see what that accomplishes.
So, Denny, what do we need to know about this game? I mean, 9.5-point road underdogs. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Between two of the crown jewel franchises of the 21st century, but it's just not a good game anymore.
No, it's probably going to be ugly. I will say that I think Romeo Dobbs is very interesting here a week after he had a lot of success in week three. He led the team in routes, targets, catches, yards, and scored an early touchdown against Tampa. They had some design plays for him, which I think is a big positive down the line. The Patriots are the fourth most extreme pass funnel defense so far. I'm not sure that holds up entirely here if the Packers have like tons of positive game script and can just run A.J. Dillon and Aaron Jones until they can no longer move. So, you know, that's definitely in the range of outcomes. But I do think that Dobbs looks like the guy. If you're going to go in on this passing attack this week, you go with Dobbs. And I think that because of that, Aaron Rodgers is at least, at worst, a floor option against these Patriots. On the other side of the ball, you have a Ramondre Stevenson sort of kind of taking over the backfield last week. He had 6 of the backfield's 9 high-value touches last week against the Ravens. And seems to have a pretty firm grip on the pass catching role after such a shenanigans. We didn't like it, Bill Belichick. We didn't like any of that stuff. We like what we saw last week. He had over 20 PPR points, Ramondre Stevenson. So perhaps with a game of dump offs from Brian Hoyer, it could happen again. I think his usage in week three, could portend great things for him going forward.
Two of the league's most surprising teams through 3 weeks, the Jaguars and Eagles square off in Philadelphia, with Philly getting nearly a touchdown as home favorites, Kyle. There's a lot to talk about on both sides, but I'm curious this week, what should we make of Devontae Smith outgaining A.J. Brown 250 to 154 over the past 2 weeks? If anything, could you make an argument it's actually good for A.J. Brown that another threat is being established? How should we be viewing what is going on in the Eagles receiver corps?
I will admit I had more fun when A.J. Brown had 50% of the targets in week one for someone who was just taken with 2-3 turn pretty much every time. That, you know, that's what I wanted to see. But we knew that wasn't sustainable, right? No one sees half of their team's targets. And I think to me, sort of the operative point here is, one, that the Eagles' passing attack is great. Hurts leads the NFL in yards per attempt right now. And they're passing, at least they're dropping back at a rate much higher than they did last year. They'll still get converted to rush attempts by Hurts at a pretty high clip as far as quarterbacks are concerned, but they're clearly making an effort to be the team we want them to be. To me, though, I don't feel bad, you know, having A.J. Brown at all, because when Devonta Smith over the past 2 weeks is absolutely cooking, going off, especially last week, although the underlying stats still said he and Brown were splitting the work, because Smith had a 39% share of the air yards, 29% share of the targets. A.J. Brown was at 36 and 28. They were basically 1A, 1B. And that's when Smith was doing his absolute best work. And then we see when A.J. Brown goes off, it's because he's the team's true alpha. So I'm not too concerned. I still am going to rank them very clearly, A.J. Brown and Devonta Smith. But I will say we're a little bit off of the very fun, for me, highs of week one.
I mean, I think it's notable that they really haven't been pushed over the last 2 weeks, eight points against them last week by the Commanders, only 7 points against them from the Vikings. I don't know if the Jaguars can push the Eagles here, but they have a chance. Definitely. So if this game gets a little nutty, a little high scoring, I think, you know, maybe we get A.J. Brown and Smith going. I mean, this Eagles team is really fun. You know, they're actually a pass first team. To be in those scripts that, you know, they were in of the last 2 weeks, you know, the worry going into the season was that the Eagles might be a run heavy team. If they haven't been run heavy in those scripts, and they haven't, they have a 4% pass rate over expected this season. They have pass rates over expected of 3%, 4%, and 5%. They're trending up and they're consistently pass first, bordering on pass heavy. I mean, if they get in a shootout here with the Jaguars, we could see fireworks.
What you're saying is this is happening. It really, really is happening. Jalen Hurts is happening. The Eagles passing is happening. Danny, on the other side, so we want this to maybe be – it's a really big week for the Jaguars. Like, this is a big-time prove-it spot for the Jaguars. It's a big spot for Christian Kirk, who could have to face a lot of Darius Slay. But still, Kirk has been producing as, like, a wide receiver one. Like, you're ranking him as a wide receiver two. What is going on behind Christian Kirk? Are we interested – Zay Jones missed practice Thursday, so maybe that's what's going on. But we're interested in Zay Jones. We're interested in Evan Engram. Maybe are we interested in Travis Etienne? What's the lay of the land behind Christian Kirk?
Well, the good thing about the Jags offense so far is that there are only three receivers running routes, and that's Christian Kirk, Marvin Jones, and Zay Jones. Zay Jones and Marvin Jones have completely different receiving profiles where, you know, Christian Kirk is seeing enough of the intermediate stuff and the downfield targets to create a really hopeful high floor, even high ceiling fantasy profile. But Zay Jones has a 5.7 ADOT. He's the short area guy, whereas Marvin Jones has a 15.7 ADOT. He's going to continue to stretch the field, see downfield targets. Marvin Jones is going to have the occasional blow up week. Okay. Zay Jones is going to be the more reliable fantasy option. I wrote him up in my week four waiver wire column. And I know Zay Jones is every coach's favorite, and we have to adjust because of that. But
I think Derek Carr adopted him as like his brother. Like he made
when
him
did
his
he, brother. Because he got bounced from the Bills.
Yes.
Like, when did this start?
I don't know. Yeah, he did not endear himself to Buffalo coaches, but in where was he? At the Raiders.
Vegas.
And Raiders and
basically became like the team chaplain, like the guy they all like look to for leadership and guidance.
Right. Okay. And wisdom, apparently. But I think Zay Jones is pretty clearly the wide receiver two here in Jacksonville. And then Marvin Jones is the wide receiver three. Evan Engram, you know, just like every other tight end.
All those good things.
Is touchdown or bust. I mean,
it's a good thing he never scores touchdowns. That's usually what you want.
I mean, he almost did, Kyle. He almost did last week. You know,
I had a dollar for every time.
He scored a touchdown this year, right?
Yeah, I know, but he almost had another one, is what I'm saying. A second one.
Wow.
So Davis Maddock, by the way, had an incredible Evan Engram tweet out.
Yeah, that was good, man. It's so complicated. It would take us 20 minutes to explain, but
check it out.
You'll just have to imagine the comedy.
See Davis Maddock on Twitter.
It's a Moneyball reference. It's good. Yeah.
sticking with the Jaguars, Crane, what's going on in this backfield? Is James Robinson now? I was pretty swayed by his bad game in week two. He looked so unexplosive other than one really long run where the defense kind of laid down. But really, the other 2 weeks, he's looked more explosive. He's popping at least in like the conventional box score. Is he popping in any advanced stats? Like, is this really James Robinson's backfield for the Jags?
Yeah, so I think there's sort of two things to keep in mind with James Robinson. One is that he's like definitely got unsustainable efficiency. You know, he went 50 yards to the house on was fourth and one or something. So yeah, I mean, that's like the defense is obviously playing the long run on that play, and he was able to pop it off. And score. So like that type of stuff is going to skew the numbers. But I do think when I dug into this, I thought I was going to see like, James, his workload's ridiculously small and look what he's done. He has an expected points workload per PFF of 15.5 points per game. That's really good. That's tied for running back 9 with Nick Chubb and Christian McCaffrey. Wow, he's got a pretty strong workload here. I didn't think this was in the range of outcomes from a workload perspective. So I do think like we should probably update our priors on how much work James Robinson is able to. I didn't think this was in the range of outcomes, by the way, for the whole season. Like to have him doing it in week three coming off the Achilles tear is really impressive. He's also now run more routes than Travis Etienne for 2 weeks in a row. So he's just the lead back. It's not even that Etienne's like the passing down guy and Robinson's the early down guy. Robinson is the lead back right now. I think he looks like a rock solid RB2. Maybe down the line, ETN eats into this, but for now, I think you put him in your lineup.
Guys, real quick, in the other backfield, you know, bye weeks are going to start soon. injuries are mounting. Can fantasy managers really justify holding on to Kenneth Gainwell? Or is he a guy who is kind of an interesting late summer flyer that is just looking like a drop?
You can drop him. I don't care. You know, there are plenty of good pickups this week. I mean, waivers already ran, but there are going to be probably more good pickups the coming week. I'd like to hold him if I can, because there still should be plenty of contingent value on what is like undoubtedly one of the best offenses in the league. The problem is, even if he jumps into that starting role, I don't feel the way I do about if I have Alexander Mattison, God bless Dalvin Cook's heart, but you know, rest up as much as you can, buddy. You're going to need that shoulder in a week or two. I'm not feeling that way about Miles Sanders should anything happen to him. Kenneth Gainwell's coming into a backfield where they have the league's best running back and he plays quarterback. So I'd feel good about it, right? But you can cut him. It's fine.
So I kind of feel the same, Kyle, where it's like he's still a strong contingency value play. Mm-hmm. That feels intuitive given how strong the offense is. But Miles Sanders ranks running back 29 in expected points per game. So it's like, how much
what are you getting?
Is there even?
Yeah.
So drop him, cut him.
Yeah, definitely.
cut Kenny Gainwell. Coming off a pair of season-saving victories, the Titans and Colts meet in Indianapolis with the Horseshoe as 3.5-point home favorites. Kyle Dvorchak, what do the folks need to know about this game?
I love how in the offseason, Frank Reich told us, he's like, you know, you don't see teams, you know, running the ball 20, 30 times a game and winning championships. It's not how the NFL is. Last year, they were minus 4% pass rate over expected. It was minus 4, so it was well under the expectation. Then he goes out, Matt Ryan plays a few games. He's like, no, yeah, teams must, in fact, win by running the football because they have a minus 3% pass rate over expected. Ryan's been egregious. He ranks dead last in EPA per play. He's 23rd in completion percent over expected. Michael Pittman's getting the ball enough that you're okay with that. You don't love it, but you're okay with him. But this is a two-player team for fantasy purposes and against a Titans defense that ranks 30th in rush EPA allowed. Hopefully it's a bounce back spot for Taylor. It's very obvious that he's still an elite talent, but the offense even supporting him less than they did last year with Carson Wentz under center. So two players to worry about. I'm not buying like the Jelani Woods 2 touchdowns. I think he's third among their tight ends in routes run. So it's two guys. On the other side of the ball, it's kind of the same thing. I will say, you know, they're minus 8% pass rate over expected. So it doesn't feel great about their pass catchers, but Treylon Burks ran a route on all but one of Ryan Tannehill's dropbacks. He's still pretty solid in yards per route run and targets per route run, despite a down last week. So, you know, I don't know if this is the spot for it. It's a mid to low total game. They're slight underdogs, but I'm not too concerned that they won't continue jamming the ball with Derrick Henry, but we're working towards the role we want for Treylon Burks. Maybe this isn't the game, but the role is what we're sort of hoping for. The game will come eventually. So, you know, hold the faith on Treylon Burks, even if you don't feel great about flexing him this week.
We've seen him earn targets. We've seen him get routes. Now put them together.
Sounds like Crane's ready to fire Raymond Summerlin, by the way.
Do I have that power?
It's actually an obscure NBC clause. If someone wins a player argument, they do have the power to fire the other employee.
Well, I like Ray, so you're safe. You're safe, buddy.
Crane, I don't know if you'll like this game. Fresh off sleepwalking through a week 3 loss to the Jaguars, the Chargers arrive in Houston as 5-point favorites. What's the deal with this game?
Yeah, so the Texans rank 29th in EPA per play. They've actually been a pass-first team this year, which is weird. The Chargers were a massive run funnel last year. They've actually looked a bit like a pass funnel this year, so kind of like both teams opposite of what we expected a little bit in terms of the offensive-defensive matchup. But with that setup, I do think it's pretty good for Brandon Cooks. He leads the team at the 27% target share, 34% air yard share. He has a 95% route participation. He's really underperformed in yards per target, but that's never going to be particularly sticky, bounces around a lot. So, you know, with this volume, I think he's set up for a decent bounce back week. On the Chargers side, they could be lower volume than usual, I think, obviously with Herbert ailing, but also they just don't really have much of a chance of the Texans really pushing, even if the Texans do kind of pass against them in a non-Texansy way. I don't think they're going to be super successful doing that. So, you know, it's probably a game where they lean on the run a little bit more. The issue there is that I'm not positive that means a ton of more work for Eckler. We saw Sonny Michel have more carries last week. So, it's just kind of a game where I think from the Chargers side, like you kind of got to start your Chargers, but I don't feel good about any of them.
My Eckler theory this week is
that they kind of want to reset the passing game. Maybe Keenan Allen coming back from the hamstring injury. Justin Herbert's still hurt. I have Herbert ranked high just because of his inherent upside and his high floor. But the Texans, they're always feistier than you'd like on defense, but have been getting beat up pretty bad by the run. And like if Austin Eckler can't have a big game this week, it might be time to really kind of get concerned.
One note on Herbert is that I was talking last week, oh, you know, probably check down more, probably get the ball out quickly. He had his highest eight out of the year last week at 9.2. So his style of play isn't really changing. It doesn't look like. I think maybe the quality of play will be a little bit lower overall.
He uncorked a gem to Jalen Guyton last week. Yeah. It was legit one of the best NFL throws I've seen in the past like 5 years. He's like back foot falling as he gets pressured and just hits Jalen Guyton absolutely in stride. Man, I am worried about the offensive line. They lost Rashawn Slater to the torn biceps. And I assume they would start Storm Norton because he has more experience, although he is terrible. But instead, they're starting six-round rookie like Jamari Saylor, who looked like they might, because he's kind of undersized, would draft him as a guard. He was a good prospect, went to Georgia. But it was a 2-year starter, but now he's starting as a 6th-round rookie, his first game at left tackle. Luckily, I'm not overly concerned because it's the Texans. He's not facing an elite pass rusher on that team, but like, not a great look for this team when Justin Herbert is getting doped up for the game just to protect his ribs.
By the way, Jalen Guyton's out for the year with a torn ACL, and he was like kind of like someone who was never relevant in fantasy, but kind of an important role player for the Chargers, where he did command respect deep. And that could kind of change the dynamic of this offense.
He's playing so little, though, that I'm not sure he'll have a huge impact. I think the left tackle note is potentially massive, though.
You did tell me to drop Jalen Guyton last summer in the Dynasty League, and I did. So it could change the dynamic of the offense. It probably won't. We're going to change the dynamic of this podcast and be right back after this.
Dive into the start of summer at Whole Foods Market. Check out their Summer Splash event with sales on fresh organic produce, organic strawberries, and a fan favorite sale on Ben & Jerry's and Talenti. Explore deals on grill-friendly meats like organic air-chilled chicken breast, beef and chicken kebabs, all with no antibiotics ever from our meat department. Plus, grab easy sides from prepared foods and cool off with refreshing drinks. Kick off your summer and shop in store or online at Whole Foods Market today.
The longest field goal ever attempted is 76 yards. The longest field goal ever missed? Also 76 yards. Why bring this up? Because knowing your limits matters, both when you're kicking a field goal and when you gamble. Betting more than you're comfortable with is like trying a 70-yard field goal. It probably won't go well. So set a limit when you gamble and stick to it. Want more helpful tips like this? Go to KeepItFunOhio.com for games, quizzes, and lots of ways to keep your gambling from getting out of hand.
Start clean with Clorox, because Clorox delivers a powerful clean every time. Because messes happen. Because... I got the charcoal mask. Great, because why would I put that on my face when I could drop it in my sink? This is what I get for multitasking. Ugh, why is charcoal so sticky?
Hello?
Hey, Janice. I am so sorry. I thought I was on mute. No, we don't need to reschedule. I'll just stay off camera. Ooh, yeah, that happens. So start clean with Clorox. Use Clorox products as directed.
Don't forget to check out Matthew Berry's new show, Fantasy Football Happy Hour with Matthew Berry. The legendary fantasy football analyst is back with NBC and RotoWorld, doing what he does best, rolling out his love-hate list, breaking down who to start and sit, and so much more. There'll also be lots of actionable information along the way for you sports bettors. Check it out weekdays at noon on Peacock, or listen to the show in podcast form wherever you download and subscribe. Everyone's favorite tryhards, the Detroit Lions, host everyone's least favorite tryhards, the Seattle Seahawks, as 4-point home favorites, Denny. I wish I were asking you about DeAndre Swift, but it appears he's going to be sitting with shoulder and ankle issues. In his place will be a tandem of Jamal Williams and Craig Reynolds. How do you see this shaking out? Is it RB2 season for Jamal Williams?
Yeah, you know, he now has a path to more pass route running work, more hopefully pass catching work in this offense. You know, headed into week 3, as DeAndre Swift drafters probably painfully know, Jamal Williams actually led the Lions backfield in high value touches, which of course are receptions plus touches inside the 10. He saw 56% of those touches to 38% for Swift. This is of course headed into last game. I don't think that Jamal Williams is in line for like a massive workload because Craig Reynolds is still there. I think Craig Reynolds will take some of the pass catching work away from Jamal Williams. But, you know, I talked about him in the waiver wire column. Like, if you are like me, needy at running back in a lot of leagues, you are thrilled to death. Yeah, right. I've been starting Alec Ingold. No, I'm kidding. But
Kenny, we're all trying to find the guy who did this, who left you with no running backs.
I don't know how I ended up in this position.
That made me nauseous.
I try my best. So it's Jamal Williams. Yeah, you're starting him as an RB2 going forward. The increase in pass catching work is gonna give him a much safer floor going forward.
Crane, Denny just made sense of the Lions' backfield. Is it even humanly possible to make sense of the Seahawks' backfield? And will you try for us?
Well, we kind of knew what was going to happen if Travis Homer got hurt. We heard from Michael Sean Dugar that they were going to just put DJ Dallas in the exact same role. And sure enough, DJ Dallas is in the exact same role. So there's no upside here. Like, no. Even if DJ goes down, there's probably some dude I don't know about who's going to take that role. It won't be Rashad Penny, but Penny played 69% of the snaps last week, which is pretty good. So I think in this game, you know, against the Lions defense, it's pretty bad against the run. They should be able to run the ball here. Penny getting that kind of snap count puts him in play as a RB2. It's a low floor, low ceiling RB2, but maybe he gets in the end zone and runs efficiently. And we know he's good. We know he can run efficiently when he gets enough carries.
They say he has a high ceiling when he gets enough carries, but they just seem committed to not doing that. And it is weird. After 4 years, Pete Carroll won the Rashad Penny argument, and then it was like felt bad about winning it. I was like,
he committed a second round pick to making sure it never happened again.
So bizarre. Elsewhere with the Seahawks, Kyle, 18 receptions for Tyler Lockett over the past 2 weeks. Got a touchdown from DK Metcalf last week. He got a second end zone target where he could not get either foot in bounds. Who's the favorite right now between DK Metcalf and Tyler Lockett? Is it still the summer answer of DK Metcalf?
Yeah, it's still the summer answer of DK Metcalf, but it's close in every respect. They're nearly identical in targets per route run. Their target shares are within 1% of each other. Even their depth of target is roughly within one of each other. It's like one less than 1.5. I think that's just the Geno Smith effect, right? It doesn't matter what your job is in the offense. If you're the field stretcher, if you're the underneath guy, if you're outside slot, you're going to get targets, and they're going to be no farther than 10 yards downfield if Geno Smith is your quarterback. But to me, the very big differentiator is on the air, 6 red zone targets, 5 end zone targets for DK Metcalf. Tyler Lockett, 0 in both of those. So they're still using the guy who is giant and strong and super athletic as the red zone and the touchdown scoring guy. So to me, that's the tiebreaker. Even if this team isn't going to be getting to the red zone a ton or near the end zone a ton, when they do, DK Metcalf is absolutely the guy. And that's worth betting on if all else looks somewhat equal.
Hawks gang, I am begging you to stop tweeting at me about Geno Smith, by the way. Just absolutely begging you.
I have to say, they have a point.
Oh, my God.
What's the point?
The point is, look, Geno Smith is, I believe, leading the league in completion rate over
expected. Who cares?
He's basically handing the ball off.
He's doing well, and I know no one wants to say it. I don't. But I don't think that offense is any better or worse with Geno Smith than
it was. Come on.
Oh, my God.
Boo this man off the stage, off the podcast stage. I will say about Geno, he really falls apart the second the passing situations become predictable at all, a.k.a. when they're trailing after halftime. He gets like 200 yards in the first half and then like 30 in the second half and takes like 4 sacks. And he just does not – He does not have enough arm drive to be an NFL quarterback. So many hospital balls, so many underthrows.
Yeah, but Pat, don't you feel like an idiot now that they're 1-2 with a win over the bad Broncos and they're 21st in yards per game?
That win gets less impressive every week.
Yeah, I know.
That was their Super Bowl and they won it, so props to them.
Yeah, everything else is just icing on the cake.
It's true. It's just icing on. Denny, icing on the cake for you for defending Geno Smith is talking about the Jets and Steelers.
A deserving outcome, too, for defending Geno Smith. There you go.
The sleepy Steelers host the New York Jets as 3-point favorites as Gangrene welcomes back Zach Wilson. Denny, is there any hope that maybe the Jets will keep up their high pass attempt ways with Zach Wilson and keep these Jets pass catchers fantasy relevant? Or just what are we looking at with Zach Wilson's return?
First of all, Gino, if you're listening, I tried. Okay. The haters will not win.
You only made it worse.
I feel like when I yelled at you, it didn't sound like a bit yelling at you.
No, that was just like, mean.
It sounded like actually angry yelling.
Well, that's because it wasn't a bit. You were mad at Denny, and we disagree with it.
It was true.
All right, we're on to Steelers Jets game of the week. No, I'm kidding. Of course, that would be Bucks Chiefs on Sunday Night Football on NBC
and Peacock 8:20 p.m. Eastern.
That's right. So I think we can expect a large reduction in play volume for the Jets. Just for those unaware, somehow the Jets are averaging 74 offensive snaps per game. That's the second highest rate in the league behind the Bengals. That has generated a ton of target volume for Garrett Wilson, who is 9th in wide receiver targets. Tyler Conklin is 5th in tight end targets. Breece Hall is 2nd in running back targets. And Michael Carter is 7th in running back targets. A lot of targets going around. Of course, Joe Flacco leads the league in both dropbacks and pass attempts through three games. I think that's all going away, you know, and they really did make a concerted effort last year when Zach Wilson was under center, especially after he came back from injury. Okay. He hurt his knee. He came back. They really took the air out of the ball. I'm not sure that they'll be able to do that in every game because they're bad, but I do think that there's going to be an effort to hide Zach Wilson's deficiencies and to not let it loose the way they have let it loose over the three games. So I think you have to view everybody in this offense very differently. Now, if there is a focus on the run, kind of a lean toward the run for the Jets, obviously we have to look at Breece Hall and/or Michael Carter. And Pittsburgh is actually pretty vulnerable on the ground. I was surprised they're allowing the 7th highest rush EPA through week 3, and Pro Football Focus ranks them as kind of a middling run defense. I think that they can, you know, if this game stays close, it's probably going to be ugly, low scoring. I think Breece Hall and Michael Carter could see decent volume. I think that Breece Hall could be like on the verge of taking over it's kind of gone back and forth. He's taken on the pass catching role, and then they kind of split the early down stuff. But and then Michael Carter is back in the pass catching role. So, but I do think Breece Hall is an interesting flex play this week against Steelers.
It feels inevitable. I agree. I think like I would put money on Carter probably being ahead this week, even though Hall actually led in snaps last week, but it was very close. But I think eventually it's going to be Hall here, right?
You have to believe that. Yeah.
Yeah. It's feeling that way. I mean, he's just probably a better player. It's kind of sad, but.
But he's a really good player. So
he's really good. Yeah. So we're happy about that. We're happy about that part.
On the flip side, I wanted to mention that the Jets right now, the third most extreme pass funnel. That dog loves a pass funnel.
Man, he loves some pass funnel.
Could be good for Deontay Johnson, of course, who leads the Steelers with 35% target share and a 38% air yard share. And speaking of dogs, could be good for George Pickens.
Let the big dogs hunt. Does anybody have a counter narrative with the Jets? Like, it was Zach Wilson has a much better supporting cast than he had down the stretch last year. Or is there just no hope here?
I have a minor counter narrative, which is that for Garrett Wilson specifically, he was actually not really clicking with Joe Flacco on a per target basis. He had a 7.4 yards per target. It's decently below where you would expect based on his 10.5 ADOT. He's earning targets at a super high rate, but that might translate to Wilson as well. We'll have to see. But he's getting work out of the slot and on the outside. He gets to move around the formation. He's starting to really feel like the true number one here. So I still have some optimism for Garrett Wilson based on the target earning ability that he's shown. And obviously he was a super strong prospect, getting drafted super high in the NFL draft.
They won't do this because they probably want to protect Zach Wilson with as many weapons as possible, but they should trade Corey Davis before the deadline.
Who's taking who's taking on Corey Davis?
I don't know. Maybe the Packers.
I think Corey Davis has been okay. Yeah. I mean, the Giants. The Giants are starting David Sills. I mean, come on.
The Giants have at least one good receiver on the roster in Kadarius Toney, and they refuse to use him. They don't like good players.
Well, he does refuse to play football is one of the main problems.
That little detail. The Giants are a meritocracy, guys. That's what
they're called.
It's true.
What it's called when you play David Sills in every snap?
It is.
I don't know what it's called. It's an idiocracy, maybe?
A vomitocracy?
Yeah, vomitocracy, I think, is what we're looking for. Hey,
just keep feeding Saquon, guys.
Please, whatever you do.
Somebody in the Giants front office plays preseason DFS and fell in love with David Sills.
That's a good point.
That's the only explanation.
There's a grinder in there.
Oh, boy. In a battle of two teams that nobody really wants to watch, the Panthers welcome the Cardinals to Charlotte, North Carolina, as 1.5-point home favorites. Kyle, what do we need to know about this game other than the promised one? Christian McCaffrey seemingly already not going to play. Back-to-back mispractices, the quad injury.
Well, there was a report, I think it was from Rapport, that they are, quote, optimistic he will play. I take that obviously with a grain of salt because the DNPs would seemingly be more telling, but it could just be a defense mechanism.
Go the other way on that at this point.
But, yeah, I mean, this is the thing we need to know about this game is that, Pat, please don't assign me this game. I don't want to.
You do live in the Charlotte media market.
But I'm working the London game, and it feels like that would earn me some sway.
Okay, I actually do promise you not to give you this game.
I mean, the thing is, the Cardinals, who, a month ago I would have been like, I don't care if, Carolina isn't playing well because I get to watch Kyler Murray. That is the least of my excitement for this game. I was completely wrong a month ago about my excitement for him. He ranks 23rd in EPA per play, 25th in completion percent over expected, and he's been throwing layups, you would think. You'd think maybe he could get a higher one, that Geno Smith stuff, but he can't even do that. Fewer than 10% of his passes have gone 20 plus yards downfield. It's a career low for him, and that manifests itself in Marquise Brown having a career low ADOT as well. To his credit, he showed up last week with a 14 catches for 140 yards, touchdownless, of course, line. So I think it's clear that Marquise Brown is their best talent and they're making an effort to get him the ball. But I don't think it's going to result in too much as far as the offense actually putting points on the board. He didn't score last week, and it's not like he has an elite yards per target because he's just sort of being forced to conform to both Kyler Murray and Cliff, the anti-mind meld that is whatever's going on in this offense. So, I have very little hope. I think I rank Kyler Murray as either QB12 or QB13 this week. I'm not sure there are streaming options that are better than him, and you probably didn't draft a second quarterback if you took him, but you're in a bad spot if you drafted him, unfortunately. And it's even worse because the Panthers have a solid defense. They're above average in EPA per play allowed as far as like quality of defense goes. They're playing well, and they run so few plays. They're not an offense going to target either. Even if McCaffrey is back, per Jacob Gibbs on Twitter, McCaffrey has run a route on fewer than 70% of his dropbacks in back-to-back games. First time that's happened since he was a rookie. It is also the first time he's gone under 30 receiving yards in three straight games in his entire career. We're just, Baker killed this team. Baker just absolutely killed this team. DJ Moore had his worst game that he played fully since the very first game of his NFL career. He leads the team with 24% target share, but I don't even feel like that's worth anything at this point. We're down bad with Carolina. And if McCaffrey doesn't play, I think it goes to a full-blown committee. Deonta Foreman and Chubb Hubbard have split the few carries they've seen exactly, and they've played 14 and 12 snaps, and neither of them are notable as really pass catchers. So that might go to someone else. Like, they could call up like Raheem Blackshear from the practice squad or something, or just not throw to the running backs anymore. So, I mean, I think DJ Moore, you're still flexing him because of the strong target share, because they're underdogs. They're playing fast, but they don't get many plays off. So, and McCaffrey, like, obviously you're still playing him, but you're playing him as like a almost a Najee Harris level player. He's actually been efficient as a runner, which is the thing he has over a lot of other guys. But that's not why you drafted McCaffrey. I'm sorry.
I wish I had anything to push back.
I thought you might. I was hoping.
I don't. No, I think that, not only do I agree with what you said, but I think that, if you're looking at this from Cliff's perspective, and, God help me, I'm trying to get in the mind of Cliff Kingsbury, but you might go more conservative here. Like, passing volume is also a concern. You're not going to get pushed that much on the other side for once, because the Cardinals have a really bad defense, but the Panthers, that's not enough. They're still going to struggle. So you're not getting pushed, and that gives you an opportunity to run a little bit more. James Conner, 75%.
Who he said he wants to get more involved, by the way.
Great. Cliff.
Yep.
Love it.
Yeah, he had 60% snaps against the Rams. He was up to start the year. He had 75%. So I think you'll probably get back towards that a little bit, lean on him a little bit more. And we're probably going to have volume down in the passing offense. So in addition to the inefficiency for Murray, now we have less overall passing attempts. Fun.
The LaVisca play was fun, though. We got that. I'll always have that. I have it tattooed three different spots. Still LaVisca,
maybe.
Yeah.
And now he's in. Now he's injured. By the way, he's not.
That's true.
Is he?
Yeah, he's DNP today, I think. Yeah. Maybe limited.
Lord.
With a hammy issue. So you know, you got your. He ran 60 yards for the first time in his career, and it did not go well.
Popped his hamstring.
It was a great run. That catch after the run was the crowning achievement in football analytics, and we'll always remember it.
Yeah. They never take that away from you guys. Yes. Does anyone have any thoughts on Rondale Moore, by the way? Seems like he's coming back.
I think I'm pretty excited for him. I mean, if he takes on the Greg Dortch role, he's going to see a lot of that.
You know Dortch isn't going away.
No, Dortch is not going away. There's no way.
Not going away. This is Cliff Kingsbury.
Oh my God! I didn't even consider that.
I actually do agree with Crane. And just like unironically, like they need to fire Cliff Kingsbury. Like
they just signed him a 5-year extension.
They need to fire Josh McDaniels for preventing the firing of Cliff Kingsbury.
Yeah.
We got to win that game, man. We needed it.
I know. Because you rarely see an NFL coach, especially with this kind of quarterback, like this out of ideas. He doesn't know how to fix this. And he actually does. They really do just need a new coach, like really badly.
They've needed a new coach for a while.
They have. A pair of teams who can already feel their season slipping away, Denver and Las Vegas, meet up in Sin City, Crane. The silver and black operating as 2.5-point home favorites. We'll begin with the Raiders and me asking you, just Matt Collins, just like why?
Because football is a weird and noisy sport. That's why. I wouldn't chase this at all. He's a 16% target share this year. That's not good. He is a 14% target per route run. That's bad. I think, you know, keep it in perspective of the larger season. I also would note that Darren Waller, there was some concern, and I noted some concern about his snap share last week. He had actually an 88% route rate, which is all we care about. We always talk about how we don't want our guys blocking. We're getting it now, so we shouldn't be concerned. We should be happy. Darren Waller's out there running all the routes. I still think he's clearly the number two option. That route rate is an elite mark for a tight end. You know, the Matt Collins explosion, I can't explain it, but I also don't think we need to worry about it going forward.
Denny, is there anything to Josh Jacobs more than meets the eye here? Or is he just basically an empty touch, empty calorie on the RB2-3 borderline?
I mean, yeah, it's a little bit of that. But, you know, he has nearly 80% of the team's rushing attempts through three games. So he's getting all of those touches. I know that he's like RB28 on the season. So, you know, I'm not.
Feels right.
Yeah, I'm not touting him as like some huge upside guy, but you know what? Josh Jacobs is out there. He's getting a lot of touches. You can't take that away from him. So I think RB3 sounds about right for Josh Jacobs. You know, no one else is getting touches in that backfield.
No one doing anything that makes any sense or is any fun for the Raiders.
He's been pretty good this year, Josh Jacobs.
Oh, like, no.
He has. I'm not a Josh Jacobs guy, but he's 11th in rush yards ever expected per attempt. He's fourth.
He's been a good rusher, actually. Never want to embrace that.
Well, weirdly, this team is. We thought Josh McDaniels would be running this committee. They spent the entire offseason just like basically just signaling their displeasure with Josh Jacobs in any way they could. But now – you know, he actually had 67% of the Raiders snaps. So, like, that's pretty good.
Yeah.
And he's also not strictly a two-down running back. He's run around on 47% of dropbacks. He has a 7% target share. It's a higher route rate than Cordarrelle Patterson, than Jerick McKinnon. A higher target share than Jerick McKinnon. He has a higher target share than Brandon Bolden. So,
anytime you can have a higher target share than Brandon Bolden, you're doing something right.
Well, you know, McDaniels wants Bolden to be the main pass catching guy. So, and he can't even make that happen. I have something else positive on Josh Jacobs. 45% evasion rate through three games. Okay,
tax evasion rate, right?
So he's evading guys all the time. You just don't know because that doesn't show up in the box score. But I guess we do care about the box score here.
We do care about the box score. Speaking of the box score, Kyle, Jerry Jeudy not filling it. is this just a matter of he's been hurt and we shouldn't overinterpret two shaky games because he had a good week one. Where the Jerry Jeudy discourse has been getting kind of weird. What's the state of the Jerry Jeudy?
Yeah, I mean, I think it's pretty clear that Courtland Sutton is very good. You know, his target share is 12% higher than Jerry Jeudy. Also, slightly higher ADOT, giving him more air yards too. But it's so weird because Jerry Jeudy missed most of week two. He came back, obviously, and played last week. But to what extent was he healthy? I don't know. I think maybe even sort of along the lines of the DK Metcalf signal is that we're seeing the scoring job for Sutton. He's got four end zone and four red zone targets. And if we can't say too much about their target shares, their air yard shares, because Judy's like literal playing time because of the injury is definitely hard to discern what it means, we can at least say that, as has been the case throughout Courtland Sutton's career, he's the scorer on the team. Hopefully this team can get together the dumb mistakes they're making, because they still have Russell Wilson, who's been efficient on a per play basis. But I mean, obviously it's hard to keep the faith.
Yeah, the Broncos need to be thanking any deity they can find that they're 2-1, because they should not be 2-1. They should be 0-3, and they could have a new lease on life here pretty soon if they could just start playing even slightly better. Not sure I can say the same about either of these next two teams, who are still kind of like overperforming. The receiverless New York Giants, Kareem, host the passing-less Chicago Bears. That was a horrible one. As 3-point home favorites, I mean, let's keep it brief.
Yeah, well, I do want to note that Rich Rebar had a good tweet on this. I'll actually tell you what this one said. He noted
the Bears have feature on the show. Yeah.
You guys should check it out. He said the Bears have 23 completed passes through three games. The last time a team had fewer completions after three games played was in 1982.
The last time this country was good.
Yeah. Yeah. So we love the Bears.
Yeah. The Bears are the people's team.
It's crazy. They have a minus 18% pass rate over expected. The Titans were the most run-heavy team in the league last year. They had a minus 8% pass rate over expected. They're over twice as run-heavy as the Titans, the Tennessee Titans. It's the whole thing, the design of the offense is like truly crazy. But at the same time, they are dealing with some pretty troubling circumstances in terms of the passing efficiency. Justin Fields ranks last in EPA per play. He has just 6.6 yards per attempt this season. Khalil Herbert has 7.3 yards per carry this season. It's like, you know, which do we do here? Obviously, if you're running this much, it's not setting Fields up for success, but I don't think they're going to get away from this. I think Herbert looks like a locked-in running back too. If Montgomery misses, they're just going to feed him. You need Fields to have, a ton of rushing to really have any chance of value. I guess Darnell Mooney you could maybe consider as a flex option. Yeah. He does have a 34% air share, which is something, but obviously that's gross. On the other side, Jones has been pressured on 52% of his dropbacks, which is the highest rate in the NFL. He's second only to Joe Flacco in allowed pressures at the quarterback position. So he is both inviting pressure. He's getting pressured constantly. But the Bears rank just 29th in pass rush grade. They're 27th in quick pressure rate. So they don't do the thing, you know, that actually gets to Daniel Jones that knocks him off his game. So that maybe offers some hope here for Jones. Now, we talked about earlier the fact that their whole wide receiver situation, they're starting David Sills. I don't think you do anything with this information other than say maybe the Giants are able to move the ball and feed Saquon Barkley. This whole offense is really just Saquon Barkley for fantasy purposes. He's fourth in rush yards over attempted per attempt. He is going against a pretty weak Bears defense. They're not going to push the Giants off script. The Giants, if they want to be run heavy here, are going to have no problem being run heavy. He sets up as an elite play.
Kyle, I'm sorry. I think I already shared this tweet with you on a different podcast, but Jacob Sanderson had a great tweet about Daniel Jones versus, has he ever taken a five-step drop and then just released the football? Like, have you ever thought about that, Daniel Jones? Just maybe taking
the
drop?
No, he hasn't.
Yeah, the answer is no.
So it's a bad.
You really did like that. That's a double podcast.
Well, because it perfectly sums the man up. His line is bad, but maybe you could throw the football just occasionally, like, and just avoid some of this pressure. Mm. Maybe just throw the ball. Ever thought about that?
He wouldn't be Daniel Jones if that's what he was doing.
Khalil Herbert, by the way, the Giants are hemorrhaging rushing production. I guess they're getting a little healthier on their defensive line, and the Bears have the second highest rated run blocking line. Be a Pro Football Focus. So I do think that – I think it honestly sets up as an RB one week for Khalil Herbert.
And you understand why the Bears are running the way they do. They ran for like 6 point something yards per carry against the Packers. Then Herbert was running for over 7. Like, I mean, when the alternative is let Justin Fields walk into pressure, throw interceptions, get why they're doing what they're doing. I get it. I understand. It's unfortunate, but like that, it makes sense. I'm not sure if it's correct, but I understand the logic.
It's not correct yet. The behavior is going to be reinforced by the results so far.
It feels so wrong, right. Yet it is so that's right.
That one kind of landed awkwardly.
I didn't hear what you right.
said. It feels so wrong, yet it feels so right.
Wow, we can edit that out.
It came now. It's in 20.
Editor, can you make Pat Daugherty say something funny that makes sense in that one?
No. That's, trust me, it makes sense. I'm not sure if anything will make sense in this final game where we end in San Francisco. But the Niners hosting the Rams is 1.5-point home favorites. Kyle, I'll cut to the chase. Should fantasy managers be concerned with what they're seeing from the Rams passing attack? You may have thought I was going to say the 49ers passing attack, where Jimmy Garoppolo seems to get worse every day. But yeah, I'm not liking what I'm seeing from the Rams passing attack. What is the state of the Rams passing attack?
There's some good. The good is that Stafford is seventh in CPOE, and he is eighth in EPA per play if you take out the turnovers. So I think that's sort of getting the Stafford special that we saw in Detroit a bit, where he sort of is more prone to mistakes than we saw in his first season, which was incredible under Sean McVay. And also it is compounded by the fact that he last year had the number one pass blocking line per PFF. And now that has fallen to the number 22 pass blocking line. He also has no one outside of Cooper Kupp. Allen Robinson ranks.
I was going to say, is the supporting cast even good?
No, I mean, no. Other than Cooper Kupp. Cooper Kupp is great, incredible, but it is really difficult to run an entire offense through one single receiver. It's the, hey, they're doubling this Cooper Kupp guy or whatever, and even if Cooper Kupp goes for 150, Robinson ranks behind Ben Skowronek in yards per route run and targets per route run. He's not doing anything out there.
He's been targeted, Allen Robinson, at half the rate per route of Tyler Higbee. Probably bad.
And it's Tyler Higbee. Like, that stat would be...
He's one of the worst players in the NFL, Tyler Higbee.
Yeah, who famously doesn't command targets.
Yeah, that's like his whole thing. But when Allen Robinson's out there, they're like, where's Higbee?
Yeah. So it's the supporting cast and both the sense of the pass catchers and the offensive line. It's the Stafford making mistakes. He's also taking a lot of sacks, but there's still some good stuff, right? He still has a high CPOE, which means he's still accurate, right? He's not like falling off. You know, we had like the elbow scare at the end of the offseason. I don't think it's that. I frankly just think it's the way the team is structured right now is not nearly as good at supporting a good quarterback as it was. They've also had some kind of goofy game scripts. They had pretty big leads entering the fourth quarter in each of the past 2 weeks. It's 28-10 and 20-9, and they kind of just sat on those. So I think better days are ahead, but I don't think we're getting back to where we were last year. That's almost a guarantee.
So we got mixed reviews on the Rams passing attack. Denny, what can we say about the 49ers? Because I just think Jimmy Garoppolo is a player that he's getting respected less and less by opposing defenses, and which is revealing his limitations more and more. Am I being like overly dramatic? What is the state of the Niners passing attack with Jimmy G?
Did you see that clip of him saying something about Kyle Shanahan's play calling?
Calling sucks. All your plays suck.
That was really, and there's no denying what he said. So I'm sure that that's a little awkward in 49ers headquarters. All right, so I wanted to highlight Brandon Ayuk because Ayuk had, I know, small sample, okay? And I know there was a monsoon in week one, but Ayuk had a 7% target per route run rate in week one. He's had a 31% target per route run with Jimmy G under center so far through like 2.5 games, or two and three quarters of games, I guess. This is great for him, I think, in the long run. Overall, like him and Debo, I think, are in a great spot to keep posting numbers with a more pass heavy attack. Still not crazy pass heavy. Obviously, this is the Niners. This is Kyle Shanahan. But it has been good for them. It will continue to be good for both of those guys.
Sounds like maybe it's going to be Brock Purdy season soon, is kind of what we were saying with Jimmy G getting caught saying one of the most famous offensive play designers in the entire world. That he thinks his plays suck.
It is sort of unbelievable they lost that game against Denver.
Yeah, it is. Because of Jimmy Garoppolo. He can't make plays. He just straight up can't. It's the same thing the Rams went through with Jared Goff. Sean McVay was tired of having a quarterback who could not create any of his own offense. So Matthew Stafford creates a little too much of his own.
I know, like, we had like a whole day of just talking about the fact that he stepped out of bounds and in the same play also threw a pick six, but it didn't count because he'd already stepped out of bounds. But like, I feel like we can't move on from that, right? No. Like, we have to just mention it again.
No. How does this guy have a Subway commercial, man? Come on.
How does have you seen the Russell Wilson Subway thing?
I'm not sure if I have.
Do you got to check it. There's the video leaked or something of him. Like, it's just like him just like monologuing. And it's like he's doing like I think it was PFT Commenter who tweeted out like this. He's delivering this with the exact same tone as if he's talking to someone who's like bound with a gag in their mouth. Like, it's like full blown serial killer.
Yeah,
it's crazy. You got to check it out.
So you're saying he doesn't have the vocal dynamic range that we do.
It hasn't been programmed into his system yet. I'm convinced he's a robot. He's not real. And we just need to get him on the new iOS to get him to, you know, reboot this Broncos garbage.
He starts whispering at one point.
Yeah, that video is chilling. Is one of the more disconcerting things I've seen in a long time. Like, I was like rattled afterward.
Yeah. These are chilling and disconcerting.
It will rattle you.
We're talking about a Subway commercial line read.
It will chilling.
It's frightening.
The director, Russ, maybe a little less chilling on the next.
Someone put it over the Joker in the scene where he breaks into Bruce Wayne's ball. It works. The whole thing tracks.
Wow. You can just do that next one a little less chilling, please.
We have people on the set crying, Russ.
Yeah. We are trying to sell ham sandwiches.
So. Russ, a little less Silence of the Lambs and a little more you're selling ham or whatever.
Oh, my God. Okay, we got to end the show. The show's over. Russell Wilson's over. Denny's been calling this one for months. He's bad.
Yeah, you're right, Denny.
He can't even do a Subway commercial. I mean, how can that be a franchise quarterback? So
you can't.
So check out everything on the site. Check out Crane's walkthrough. Check out Kyle's 32 facts. Check out Denny's waiver wired. Kyle and Denny, I know, have more articles coming out. My rankings are out. So much good stuff on the site. Check out Kyle. You have a show Thursday night. There's a lot of stuff we do.
Show Thursday night, preview the Thursday night football game. Is that tonight? Oh my God, that's tonight.
That is tonight.
I should start prepping for that podcast. And then if it's too late for that, Friday, catch me and Crane doing the DFS preview. We'll also answer some of your start sits at the appropriate time as well. So check that out.
For Patrick Crane, for Kyle Dvorchik, for Denny Carter, I'm Patrick Daugherty. Thank you so much for joining us. We will catch you later.
The longest field goal ever attempted is 76 yards. The longest field goal ever missed? Also 76 yards. Why bring this up? Because knowing your limits matters, both when you're kicking a field goal and when you gamble. Betting more than you're comfortable with is like trying a 70-yard field goal. It probably won't go well. So set a limit when you gamble and stick to it. Want more helpful tips like this? Go to keepitfunohio.com for games, quizzes, and lots of ways to keep your gambling from getting out of hand.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.